Hi, I'm Bill Gardner, host of Rhapsody in Black. I play classic rhythm and blues from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Boogie with Bill Gardner every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 on KPFK 90.7 FM.
Rock that boogie!
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and live around the world at kpfk.org.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH, this is The Car Show, broadcasting this week and every week on KPFK 90.7 FM for over 50 years. Hard to believe that I am even older than that. I know it's tough to imagine that, but some people are that old. Michelle is on the road this week, so we are without Michelle. However, we have with us a special guest from the Pacific Northwest. We are joined by automotive news reporter Jack Walsworth, all the way from Seattle. Jack, welcome to The Car Show.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having me.
Hey, great to have you. And what's it like up there? I just looked at weather.com and I'm shocked. It's raining.
Yeah, so it does rain. Probably not as much as people might think, but currently gray and rainy here today. But we do have nice summer weather as well. But it's just kind of fall here in Seattle, but it's, no complaints.
I used to live there. I lived there for two or three years. I can't remember. It was the 60s. It's hard to remember anything. I didn't mind the rain.
Yeah. We can see mountains and all the Puget Sound. It makes it a little bit easier to put up with the days.
It makes you a better driver too, right? If the streets are always wet. Here in LA, once it rains, everybody goes crazy and crashes into each other. Up there, they probably know how to handle the rain.
Right. Yep. For sure.
Coefficient of friction. I looked around a little bit and there are some things going on. There are car things going on up in Seattle. You guys have the LeMay Museum, which is supposed to be one of the best car museums in the world. Have you ever been to that one?
So I feel like a bad car enthusiast. I have not, but it is on my list of things to do here. Every time I drive by it, which admittedly isn't that often, but I-5, when you're going through Tacoma, you go right by the museum. It's right off.
Yeah, it's right there. It looks pretty neat.
Yeah, it's really cool looking. I mean, it really, if the museum is half as cool as it looks from the outside, I'm sure it's a great time. But yeah, I just haven't made it over there yet, but I'm going to probably save that for a rainy day some weekend.
Save it for a rainy day?
Yeah.
And there will be a rainy day.
Yep.
We know that.
Not when the weather's good and I'm hiking. But yeah, it's funny. So I used to live in Metro Detroit, and obviously there's a lot of car museums in the Detroit area, in the Midwest. I grew up in the Chicagoland area. There's a lot of museums there, but yeah, LeMay's claim to fame is America's car museum, which is, kind of a bold claim, all things considered. So, but I've checked on their website a few times. They've got a special exhibit going on right now that started, I believe it was earlier in the summer, but it's all about like the JDM craze, basically. So it's very big on Japanese vehicles. I believe it's mostly about ones that are now able to be imported in. So it's kind of like on the whole 25-year phenomenon. But that's supposed to be really cool. I've heard from social media it's worth checking out. So I definitely did make it over there. But yeah, it looks like a good time.
LeMay is one of the few car museums to actually acknowledge Japanese cars as collector cars. Down here in Southern California, we have the Japanese Classic Car Show, which we just had a couple of weeks ago. Peterson Museum down here has had exhibits and gatherings of Japanese classic cars. So it's something that's sort of being acknowledged very slowly. I wrote about the Pebble Beach not having any Japanese cars, and they say, wait a minute, man. In 1968, we had a Toyota, what is the one, the 2000 GT?
They said
they had that. Yeah. And then they said that they also had a recent car, a supercar, that was a Japanese designer had built the body and put that body on a Lamborghini, so that counts. So, I mean,
interesting.
Anyway, it's slowly changing. The world is changing, and especially here on the Pacific Rim, you guys are perched right there, probably closer to Japan than we are down here in LA. So you should go there. Check that out. You can come back and report on it.
Yes. Yes, well, for sure. I will make a point to do that. But yeah, no, the Japanese car scene here is really strong. I mean, like I said, I used to live in Metro Detroit, which is, as most listeners probably realize, is very domestic heavy. I mean, you see some import stuff, but generally speaking, it's, you know, hot rods and whatnot. But, you know, here I take my dog on walks throughout the day, and pretty common sight to see right-hand drive, clearly imported car, and a lot of vans, which is cool. But then there's a lot of, like, I've seen like a Toyota Surf, which looks like almost like a precursor to the 4Runner, but it was right-hand drive, like super cool graphics on it. So yeah, the Japanese car culture here is huge. And also, obviously, mini trucks are really popular too. Kind of see those in all shapes and sizes, colors, platforms, things like that. So yeah, no shortage of cool things that weren't usually here, but are now, which I guess if you're enthusiast is a fun thing to see. So
cool cars in Seattle. So we got the report. We got the lowdown from Jack. Thank you, Jack. And we have a few things going on here in Southern California. One website that I have always appreciated, if you don't hear enough about what's going on in Southern California car culture, go to SoCalCarCulture.com. We're not getting any money from these guys, so it's an objective opinion. They have everything. If you're looking for hot rod cruise-ins, of which there are millions across America, go to SoCalCarCulture.com, and you'll find one in your neighborhood. Going on right now here is the NHRA Winter Nationals for 2024. Open your window and listen. You could probably hear those things firing up from Pomona. As they say in their ads, it all comes down to Pomona. And as Michelle likes to point out, it is officially the In-N-Out Burger Pomona Drag Strip. That is going on today and tomorrow, the finishing round of the NHRA season. Championships are up in the air. We hear that John Force is up and around, and he'll be there in the paddock maybe, so you might get an autograph from him. There used to be a round of NHRA up in the Pacific Northwest. Is that still going on, Jack? Does that still happen? Do you happen to know that?
Yeah, there was an event back in July at Pacific Raceways, I believe is the name.
Yeah.
I was out of town that weekend. This past summer was the summer of weddings, so most of my weekends I was at a wedding somewhere. But I had heard from the local organizer on that. So yeah, it sounded pretty cool. Again, another automotive thing I need to do now that I'm living out this way. But
well, yes. Don't worry. This is not a job interview. You can if you haven't been there, we forgive you. I went up there once. I wrote a story on Buster Couch, who was the starter for the NHRA for something like 40 years or something. And the only time that I could actually sit there on the same weekend that he was starting cars was, and at that time he had become race director or something. So I just sat next to him in the control tower while he'd say, "Light me two more, gentlemen." And then they'd fire up the cars and they'd run down the strip. And
that's awesome.
And the thing that impressed me was that racetrack was sitting in these pine trees. Just these towering, this rainforest of giant trees. It's a beautiful part of the world. So, enough about the Pacific Northwest. there's a lot more to Jack than just where he lives, folks. A lot going on there. Okay. So also right now, today and tomorrow, there's an event called Icons of Design. Now, remember our buddy, Jonathan Ward. He is the one who puts together all those, he calls them icon derelicts, and he does started out with refurbishing FJ40s. He's just a very creative person, and he has a bunch of craft type things, and a whole bunch of craft type friends of his are going to be till 6 p.m. tonight and then tomorrow, Sunday, from 9 to 4 at Haggerty Garage Plus Social. The address is 7933 Haskell Avenue, Haskell Avenue in Van Nuys. The event is led, of course, by Icon 4x4 founder Jonathan Ward. Brings together artisans, builders. Last year I went to this, and there were all kinds of custom cars, trucks, and SUVs. A lot of very interesting Broncos. that you, you know, if you want to spend six figures for a Ford Bronco, there are people who will gladly accommodate you, and they'll build you a Ford Bronco with a new Coyote V8 or something in it. There are motorcycle customizers. I met and spoke to Brad Pitt's motorcycle customizer.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. That's like a semi-tangential brush with celebrity. Yeah. There are watchmakers and other artists. It costs you $35 to get in, but all that money goes to the Go campaign, which is a very worthy charitable event, Jonathan tells me, and they help young people throughout the world. If you want information, go to iconsofdesign.org. Good event. If you like motorcycles, there's an in-store meetup. There's always all you need if you have a motorcycle is a reason to go somewhere. So here it is, a reason to go somewhere. Tomorrow, Sunday, November 17th, from 12:30 p.m., you can, let's see, they call it an unforgettable motorcycle gathering, and that is going to be at the Dionysi store, which is in Santa Monica. It is on Lincoln Boulevard, 1418 Lincoln Boulevard. Technically, it's Los Angeles, but, you know, you can call them at 424-268-4378 or go to dionysi.la@dionysi.com, and I will spell Dionysi for you. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's Dainese. Again, we don't get any money from these guys. These are just interesting events. I've been out there to this. I went to the 20-year event of the Dionysi store in Orange County a couple of weeks ago, and there's just a whole bunch of, you know, motorcycle guys and gals and a lot going on. They deployed an airbag, and I'm a big proponent of motorcycle airbags. That's like a vest that you wear. And when it has accelerometers and gyroscopes? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Little tiny things
that spin around. And when you are out of position, it can sense this crash. So it has millions of different scenarios built into its memory. Uh-huh. And it can sense that you're about to crash, and it puts a charge of, argon and helium into this vest. And it becomes really almost like a bulletproof vest. I mean, I have seen them discharged, and I had one discharged on me, not during a crash. Luckily, it was just a demo, and you knock on it, and it's like a Kevlar vest, and it protects your shoulders and your ribs and all your vital organs, which you will probably need. So anyway, that is tomorrow, Sunday, November 17th at the Dionysi store down there on Lincoln Boulevard in Santa Monica. Lots of fun. Hey, I see that there is another car show up in your area, Jack. What is going on?
Yeah, so today and tomorrow is the Seattle International Auto Show here downtown. So it is. There's an event center right by Lumen Field, which is where the Seahawks play. It is an indoor convention center, so I don't have to worry about the rain. But yeah, the auto show here is an annual thing. Usually starts on a Thursday, ends on a Sunday. I haven't been to it yet, but I am going this year. Finally get to check it out. I'm guessing it's more of like a regional show feel, but there are opportunities for people to, if they want to go on a test track, they can do that. Some various automakers will have cars there they can ride around in, which I know is a huge draw for auto show attendees. And I believe it's put on in partnership with the Washington State Dealer Association. So I'm sure quite a few dealers will be there. I'm not entirely sure if they are the ones bringing the vehicles or not. I know when I went to the Portland Auto Show, or sorry, the Oregon Auto Show earlier this year in Portland, most of the vehicles there were brought in from local dealerships. So
is that sort of a consumer show? It's no longer like, I'm old enough to remember when Frankfurt and Tokyo were big deals and Detroit was a big deal. But these, I think the auto shows are kind of evolving to become more like consumer events. Is that your sense of the Seattle Auto Show?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely feels like a consumer show, which, you know, from the media's perspective, auto shows, like you mentioned, have changed a lot. But from a consumer standpoint, they seem to be, you know, just as important as ever for people checking out new wheels and kicking tires. So, but yeah, should be cool.
All right. We've got a show down here in Los Angeles, too. The L.A. Auto Show runs November 22nd to December 1st at the L.A. Convention Center. If you want information on that, go to laautoshow.com. This year, they're going to offer what they are calling an unmatched range of test, ride, and drive experiences. 40-plus different models will be in the ride and drive lineup. So that's regular traditional gasoline cars, but also hybrids and EVs. So if you've been thinking about getting an electric car, this is a good opportunity to do it. You just go down there, and I think you sign up for it. And, you know, so, I don't, depending on how many people are waiting in line behind you, you can drive an electric car for what might be your first time, and it might sway you. It's going to be on city drives around the convention center. And let's see, you can get a list of the cars that are going to be available for the drive at laautoshow.com. And it's right there in downtown LA. You can even take public transportation to it. People don't believe that we have light rail here in LA, but we do. And you can take one, and it drops you off right across the street from the show. So it's easy to get there. You can also park. They have lots of parking, so feel free to drive your car there. I don't know how much parking is. It's probably expensive. To get into the show, I think I don't have that price here right now. But, you know, it's a few bucks, and you're supporting an auto show. So it's not like it was back in the old days when manufacturers would spend millions of dollars on concept cars, which they would reveal to the world press. And, you know, when the LA show used to be at the same time as the Detroit show for many, many years. And, you know, Detroit would be snowing and icy and miserably cold, and LA would be sunshine. I remember when the Chazzetta Moroder V16T debuted. That was a big deal, and that was right there in LA. Do you remember that car, Jack?
I can't say I do, but I'm
supercar. It's the supercar where they built it looks like they put two V8s together and then mounted them transversely behind the seat. So it was a mid-engined V16, and I spoke to the guy who did it, Mr. Moroder, I'm getting my facts wrong. But anyway, he said that it was just one casting. They didn't put two V8s together. Anyway, that was at one of the LA Auto Show debuts. Also, what eventually became the General Motors electric car. At the time, the concept was called the GM Impact, which I kind of thought was an unfortunate name for a car. You know, 'cause you don't want to think of the thing impacting anything. But anyway, there will be a lot there to see. Always good to go down there and check it out. If my word of advice, insider's thing, is go like on a Monday, because there's nobody there. It's like you have the entire convention center just for you, and you're walking around there. It's a great way to get around and check it out. If you have more money and really like racing, Formula One is returning for year two of the Heineken Silver Las Vegas Grand Prix, November 21st through 23rd. You know, there's talk that the tickets are not selling out. Thursday night tickets, last time I checked, were $99. So you could actually see Formula One cars going on a track, either in practice or qualifying. If you go Thursday night for $99, you can get Sunday T-Mobile Zone at the Sphere is $2,000, which I'm not going to pay to see that. But, you know, it's out there and it is available for you. There are, let's see, what else do we have? We have 3 days events with driver access via, this is the MGM Paddock Club. 3 days of the event with driver access, VIP transportation and hospitality, food included at $16,865, but that is sold out. So just forget about that one.
Yeah.
But I think you can still get the Bellagio Fountain Club. Tickets still available at $12,500 per person. And for $5,000, you can get 3 nights at the Cosmopolitan or the MGM Grand and a pair of main grandstand tickets. $5,000. So you can spend ridiculous amounts of money on this, but just, you know, check it out, see what they offer. We have 1 minute left. Which of these events should we give to the 1 minute? Do you like Mazdas?
Yeah, Mazdas are always fun, for sure.
All right, the All Mazda Cars and Coffee, November 24th. So this is way out there, from 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Mazda of Claremont, 667 Auto Center Drive, Claremont, California. This is a Thanksgiving food drive and car show. Bring some canned food and your Mazda to the dealership and check that out. I think there's also, yeah, here it is. If, as long as we're planning far out in advance, two items, and we're going to go over just a little bit in our calendar section here. The Moon Eyes Christmas Party Show and Drag, Saturday, December 7th at Irwindale. Really cool cars, lead sleds, bombs, hot rods. There's drag racing going on Saturday, December 7th at Irwindale. I have never been disappointed by that show. That's fun. And then our buddies at the Motor for Toys charity car show and toy drive is Sunday, December 8th from 6:30 a.m. to 12. And that's at L.A. Pierce College, 6201 Winnetka Avenue, Woodland Hills. But take the Victory Boulevard and Mason entrances only. Bring a admission to get into that is one or more unwrapped toys worth $20 or more. Go to motor4toys.com. And that four is, of course, the number for toys. Now, we're moving on to the news. And what we're going to start the news with, you may have heard, and we have heard this in the past, so I don't know whether to take it with a grain of salt or not, but they say that Irwindale, and they came out with a press release on October 29th saying this, so it must be true if it's on a press release. After 25 years of races and other events, the racetrack and its beloved drag strip are closing at the end of the year. Their schedule for the rest of the year is the Nitro Revival. Oh, we already had that. Seven Stock, November 16th, which is going on right now as we speak. So if you hurry, you can get out to that. And then they're going to have Thursday Night Thunder. And, of course, as we said, the Moon Eyes Christmas Party. And that's going. Then they're going to have the Irwindale Speedway Grand Finale event on December 21st, an all-day event with NASCAR short track races and a night of destruction, figure eight and trailer races. Those are always fun. Have you ever seen something like that, a night of destruction, like a demo derby, Jack?
Yeah, once as a kid. Something I'd like to probably appreciate more as an adult, just for the absurdity of it. But that sounds intriguing. If I was down that way, I would definitely want to check it out.
They're fun. Trailer races, you know, the figure eight trailer races, you really have to judge the length of your car and the length of the car you're about to T-bone. Yeah. So that'll be fun. They're going to have serious racing too. The ARCA Menards Series West. And let's see, the track's assets and events transition to Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway in Bakersfield for 2025. So maybe some of the stuff will be taken up. It'd be a much farther drive away. Let's hope that this is just yet another one of these things where they say they're going to close the track. But in reality, I don't know. A cynic would say that somebody's just using this threat of closure as a bargaining tool to get more of. But I don't know. They had a press release, so it must be true. So in any case, I was there opening night 25 years ago, and that was great. It was it's a great track, a half-mile paved oval with a one-third-mile paved oval on the inside. And, of course, that's where Formula Drift was held for years and years. They have drifting up in the Pacific Northwest, don't they, Jack?
Yeah, there is some events around here. I haven't checked them out yet, but, yeah, that is a thing.
It's an official round of the Formula Drift Championship. They only have eight events, and I think they still have one up there. So anyway, if it actually happens, it's a sad day for Irwindale, sad day for race fans. Our buddy Harold Osmer, who is often on the show and who has written several books, a couple of them titled Where They Raced, and he has detailed the history of racetracks in Southern California. There have been literally hundreds of racetracks in Southern California, and almost all of them are gone, and it looks like we're going to lose yet another one. Sad day. And no official word about the track out in Fontana, the former California Speedway.
Yeah.
They still have. Yeah. Did you ever go to that one?
I haven't, but I went to Michigan International Speedway quite a bit as a kid. And I believe those were like twins. I think MIS came first, maybe, and then Fontana or vice versa.
Yeah.
So haven't been to Fontana, but probably similar experience from what I saw at MIS.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a copy of Michigan International Speedway. And by golly, it's bulldozed under. Word was that they were going to make a half mile oval, but no update on that. They still have some of the grandstands. That was a beautiful grandstand there. Some of the garages and part of the front straight. So they're almost, you know, this leftover stuff, they could make another half mile oval. So who knows? And NASCAR needs to be in Southern California. How many people do we have in Southern California? It's tens of millions, I think, that certainly over 10 million. And, you know, enough of those people have to like racing, right? Certain percentage always likes racing.
So. Right. Yeah. And for a while, there's quite a few California drivers too. I know a few have retired, but yeah, you'd think that would be a market they'd want to be in.
Yeah. It would make business sense, say I, who has really no business sense at all. Another update, Waymo, the driverless cars that you can get in and they take you places that you used to have to have a certain kind of a pass or something. And now Waymo ridership is open to anybody who wants to get in the thing and go for a drive. You can learn more at waymo.com. And they'll tell you a little bit more about it. But starting today, now this was a release that came out November 12th, so a while ago, I guess. Roll out the red carpet starting today. Anyone in Los Angeles can take fully autonomous rides 24/7 with Waymo One, rolling through Santa Monica, Hollywood Boulevard, USC, and everything in between. Waymo has enjoyed a warm welcome from Los Angeles. I think when they say warm welcome, they mean that none of their cars have sadly driven over anybody or had any, you know, of those well-publicized problems that some of the other autonomous cars have had. Jack, have you ever ridden in one of those cars?
Unfortunately, driverless car? I haven't. I remember when Waymo first started getting more, you'd see him more often on the road. It was out in like the Phoenix area. I had a friend that lived in Phoenix for a few years, so I'd go see him, and you'd see the Pacifica Waymos running around. But I haven't had a chance to ride in the new Jaguar ones. But I will be in LA in next week for the auto show. So maybe I'll, for a break from work, and I'll try to take a Waymo somewhere. But no, it's super interesting, and I think they've also talked about eventually going to Atlanta too. So I think LA is the next, or LA is the newest one, but it sounds like there's going to be more places coming here in the future.
They're rolling out across the country eventually. Yep. I did get a chance to see, of course, the General Motors Cruise have that unfortunate incident, which in its defense, I don't want to sound like I'm a corporate spokes guy, but in its defense, it really wasn't the Cruise's fault. Another accident happened that was caused by a human. And as a result of that accident, I think, I don't want to get the facts wrong here, but that accident impacted a nearby cruise vehicle, which then tried to park itself, which is supposed to happen if it senses an impact. And in that parking motion is when there was an injury to a pedestrian, which is unfortunate. But I have since seen all of the cruise vehicles parked in a fenced-in yard down by a dock in South San Francisco. So I don't know what's going to happen with those guys, but Waymo is here and available to anybody. Now it's a limited part of the city, Santa Monica, as we said, Santa Monica, Hollywood, USC. So check it out. But I think if you just go to waymo.com and you can even read the press release, waymo.com/blog/2024. And you can read that whole thing right there and find out everything you wanted to know about getting your own ride in a driverless car, which maybe is the future, maybe not. What do you think? Is it the future?
I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, it seems like it's going to be something, a gradual rollout like this with Waymo might be something that, or maybe that's how it ends up going. But I know I've been in auto media for about 10 years now, and it's been something that initially was kind of talked about in very, very far off terms, and it got to be like very, very close, and now it kind of seems like it's a more measured approach is what's going to happen. But who knows? It's definitely something to keep eyes on for sure.
I think it would make a lot more sense and would be a lot simpler to implement for something like long range trucking. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've ever driven across Kansas or Texas or any of those states, it is long and boring. And I think it would, and it's, you know, a straight line with well marked lanes. And I, you know, unless it's snowing or something, you might as well have an autonomous brain operating that truck. But that's just my opinion. Let's move on to something that's fun to drive. Jack, what do you got about Volkswagen?
Yeah, so I cover the Volkswagen Group brands here at Auto News, and Volkswagen this past week took the covers off finally for what the U.S. is getting in the refreshed Golf GTI and Golf R. These were kind of foreshadowed a few months back when the European specs were shown, but they finally released all the details on what U.S. consumers are getting. I think the big note is the manual transmission is officially gone. This wasn't new news, but it's, you know, it's officially
that
official.
That is sad.
Which is, you know, I would imagine for enthusiasts, tough to see. But maybe at the same time, at least they're still offering the cars at all is probably is good news for enthusiasts. But, you know, if you look at the refresh models, you know, from far away, they look pretty similar to the outgoing ones. But Volkswagen said they tweaked the headlights a little bit, the grille, and there's a light bar that runs in the front of the vehicle. I think the big thing, besides the lack of the manual, is that the infotainment screen inside is a lot bigger. It's now a 12.9 inch across all trims, which if you're familiar with Volkswagens from the last few years, infotainment hasn't necessarily been their strongest suit. Kind of seems like they've really taken their what they've been hearing from consumers and reviewers and have addressed that head on. So this is the same unit that is in the new ID Buzz, which I'm sure some people have been seeing or will be seeing in California soon, as well as the ID 4. So it's supposed to be snappier, just a better system. And VW also brought back some hard buttons for both the Golf GTI and Golf R, got rid of some haptic features, which again have been kind of a pain point for what consumers have been saying and what I've been reading from reviews. So, you know, this looks like the refreshers are like slightly different, but it seems like the changes that they did make are ones that are aimed at making creature comforts a little bit better. The Golf R got like a 13 more horsepower. So Volkswagen saying this is the most powerful Golf ever. So if you decide to get a 25 Golf R, you do have that feather in your cap. I'm sure it's still a fun thing to ride around. But interesting with both the GTI and the Golf R, their sales are up combined up 41% through the third quarter of this year in the U.S. So you know, Volkswagen's U.S. sales are doing remarkably well. They're one of the better performers in the U.S. market this year. And the GTI and the R are kind of helping the cause. So, you know, is some of that from people trying to buy up the last manual transmissions? Possible. I guess that's logically an option. But it looks like Volkswagen has still been seeing demand in two hatchbacks that are probably the farthest you can get from a crossover.
Everything in the world is a crossover vehicle now, and so we should be thankful. We should write letters to whoever's in charge at Volkswagen. Used to be PIAC, used to be Winterkorn. We know what happened to those guys, but it's so cool that these are available. I had a Golf GTI as a long-term car, I think it was a couple of years ago, and for me, kind of the perfect car because it was practical. You could seat five people in it. Sure. It had storage in the back cargo space. You fold the back seats down, even more storage. And yet it was fun to drive. And mine was a manual transmission. And I was sad to see that one go. Golf GTI. The Golf R, I think that's a little more of a difficult business case. Just because, what is it? It's over 40 grand or something? Did they release a price on any of these?
Didn't put pricing out yet for the 25s, but I believe the Golf R's for the past model year were above 40. So they definitely are not cheap. It's definitely something you gotta pay for. But it's definitely somewhat of a unique offering in the marketplace. There's not an overflow of hot hatches these days for US consumers to choose from. So
it's the kind of thing where, like I say, the Golf R, I enjoy it. I'm glad it exists. But I think the GTI is a far more affordable way to have a fun and practical car. So I don't know, for whatever that's worth, it gets the car show stamp of approval. And we are very thankful that they're still out there doing it. And I was, that's kind of a bit of a surprise to see that Volkswagen is doing so well on the US market. Do you happen to have any sales figures? Let's see. Do you happen to know about how many cars Volkswagen sells in a full year here in the US? So, hate to put you on the spot. This is not a test.
No, you're just good. They were aiming for, or the dealers were saying that the goal for 24 was to sell about 400,000 in the US, which they haven't done in quite some time. So that'd be a big milestone. So I want to say last year they were at like 350-ish in that range. So it was going to be a pretty big jump. But, you know, they've done really well with cars that are affordable. No surprise. People are always looking for lower car payments in recent times. And they've got, you know, the Jetta, the Tiguan, and the Taos have really been driving volume for them. So I think that's partially why their U.S. sales have been so strong this year, is that they still have, relatively speaking, some affordable cars for consumers to buy. Volkswagen has also been using some pretty big incentives. So that's helping move some metal that way too. We get incentive data every month here at Auto News that we try to track, and that seems to be helping them too. But yeah, it's one of those cases that, you know, most of the market in the U.S. is not doing great, and Volkswagen is still chugging along. So curious how Q4 wraps up. I would imagine a little bit of softness, especially because the ID4 has a stop sell. That's never going to help overall sales when you can't sell a model. But
What happened with that? Why is there a stop sale for the ID4?
So there was a recall on a faulty door handle, and I believe it was something that it could open while driving, and obviously not a good thing. And
that's important that your door stays closed.
Yeah. So I think Volkswagen, to their credit, said they're going to, they need to like identify the problem, get a fix in before they can keep selling more of them. So I haven't had an update on that yet, and it might not be until early 2025. They haven't given us an updated timeline on that. So something
they got to figure that out, how to keep the door closed. Yeah. So much for German engineering. Yeah. Very good, except for this one thing. What do you think is going to happen with the ID Buzz when that hits the market? And when do you think that's actually going to be in showrooms?
So even saying Thanksgiving, which is obviously right around the corner. I would imagine, listeners in Southern California would have a quicker shot at seeing them before someone in, say, like, you know, the Midwest or, you know, a more rural area, because it seems
that
like Volkswagen's going to, the way they're allocating the initial buzzes is based basically on how well a dealership sold the ID4. That's going to be a huge part of it. So in theory, if you lived by a high volume ID4 store, you would see buzzes first. But yeah, I'll be curious how, you know, it's finally launching, right? Like, we've been talking about this car for, it almost feels like 10 years now, but
It's been longer than that. I remember the what was it called? The Bully was the little microbus that still had the cool front end. That was at Geneva. I don't know. I want to say 20 years ago, but I'm probably wrong on that. But I was excited about the ID Buzz until I saw the price.
Yeah.
So the first one, what do they call it? The first edition is $71,000. Yeah. Before anybody marks anything up. Now, my local dealer here in Volkswagen of Pasadena, they say we're not doing any markup and there's no waiting list. I don't know. But so in theory, if I just timed it, that I walked there when I saw the truck coming down the freeway, I just go in there and say, I want that one. But, you know, yeah, 71 grand.
I'll be curious to see how the markup thing goes too. Because, for dealers that say they're not going to mark them up, I can't imagine every dealership's going to be like that. So it'd be something I'm sure we'll be tracking, and our colleagues at other publications will be too, because we've seen this in the past. You know, I mean, we've always seen markups on new vehicles, but especially the last couple of years with some like hot new products that you see like these, you know, eye popping additions, and it's like, what?
Well,
I mean, somebody might pay it too, which is the crazy part.
I remember when the new Beetle came, there were lawsuits, there were fights in the showroom, there were all kinds of stuff. And then a year later, they couldn't give them away. And so,
yeah,
I don't think that's going to happen with the ID Buzz, because the van is so practical. Right. It could, in theory, replace the SUV craze, I boldly proclaim here on the car show. But I don't know. We've both driven it, right? So
Yeah, I've only driven the Euro spec. I didn't get a chance to drive the US version yet.
But, oh, so you had the two row.
Yep.
With just rear wheel drive, I think, right?
Yeah. And that was, I mean, it's still big. It's not nearly as big as the long wheelbase. It was super fun. I mean, I drove it for like probably an hour and a half total, but the seating position's a little bit different. You kind of sit up a lot higher than I was used to, and then you kind of don't have a ton of in front of you, really. It's, you know, there's the windshield, and you kind of like, you're looking over. But it was fun. I mean, ton of space, seems super usable. Yeah. I'd imagine if you had, you know, a family or had a bunch of gear to move around, you know, it's probably going to be a compelling option. And really, there's not that many minivans for sale right now in the US. So,
right.
I mean, this is kind of the fun, expensive option for consumers. But, you know, if you're wanting to look beyond an Odyssey or a Sienna, this is kind of your opportunity, I guess.
Or don't forget Chrysler Pacifica, still kicking.
Yep, that's true.
Still around. The one that I drove was the three-row all-wheel drive version of that. Actually, I drove an all-wheel drive and a rear-wheel drive, and it did seem very large. Mm-hmm. And I got the sense that unless you need three rows, I think it would behoove Volkswagen, here I am giving product advice again, to bring in the two-row at a much cheaper price. Because I was thinking I was going to sell. I have a Eurovan. I've had a whole bunch of Volkswagen vans throughout my life. And I have right now a Eurovan with about 190,000 miles on it. We've taken really good care of it. And the guy, the mechanic that we use, he says, oh, you've got another 100,000 miles on that one. So I think I'm just going to keep that thing until the prices come down on these, or maybe until you can buy an off lease one or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they do maybe bring some other variants down the road. Cause you know, Volkswagen execs have told us that's, you know, there's going to be a lot of initial demand, they think, with when they're finally on sale, but then you still got to keep people, you know, wanting to check it out and come in. And if they've already got a two row shorter wheelbase in other markets.
Yeah.
Not the craziest idea that they would eventually bring in here, but
no, they got it. What they have to do is they have to start listening to us.
Right. Yeah.
All right. One more news item before we go on into our car review section. Patrick Dempsey, everybody's favorite race car driver, is coming back. He's back, baby. He's back and better than ever. You remember Patrick Dempsey, McDreamy from, I think he's been racing for so long that nobody can remember the name of the TV series that he became famous for. What was that?
Grey's Anatomy, which was set
Grey's in Seattle. Anatomy. Okay, very good.
Everything is set in Seattle. So.
It is? Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, Hagerty announces this, an automotive enthusiast brand and leading specialty vehicle insurance provider. It sounds like another commercial for Hagerty. We're not getting any money from anybody, okay? They announced today a new docuseries called Back on Track, following actor Patrick Dempsey's return to racing. It's produced in collaboration with the Mobile One team. Back on Track is a four-part series that features behind-the-scenes access to Dempsey and as he seeks to conquer the Porsche Endurance Challenge North America, master his Porsche 718 Cayman GT4 RS Club Sport, and foster the necessary team spirit to thrive and win. Back on Track is set to premiere on Monday, November 11th, via Hagerty Media's YouTube and Samsung TV Plus channels. Be sure to tune in on what they call exhilarating action, both on and off track. So that has already premiered. By the time you hear this, it already premiered Monday, November 11th at 8 a.m. Eastern. So check those out, Samsung TV Plus or Hagerty Media's YouTube channel. So there you go. Our buddy, our friend, I've actually interviewed him and saw him in a first-class lounge once in, I don't know, somewhere in Europe. Maybe it was Paris, and chatted with him a bit. Very nice guy. Very sincere. So anyway, that's that. We're going to move on to reviews, and we're going to go right back to Volkswagen because for some reason, seems to be the Volkswagen hour because Jack has driven the 2024 Tiguan. Do you say Tiguan or Tiguan?
I go with Tiguan, but
all right. How was that?
So I will preface, I hadn't driven a Tiguan in some years. I drive a Golf All Track as my daily. So I had a Tiguan loaner when my car was in the shop years ago. And as some listeners may know, that the redesigned Tiguan is going to be shown at the LA Auto Show this year, so fortuitous timing. But I was in Detroit in September visiting our home office, and the fine folks at the press fleet got me a 24 Tiguan to drive around Metro Detroit. And it was a base model. It was not many options around it. Pretty bare bones.
That's rare that they have a base model in the press fleet. That's kind of a good opportunity.
No, for sure. I, you know, it's funny when we get press vehicles, a lot of times they're like the upper trim with packages that cost, you know, a ton of money. But so to have one that was like very much a regular everyday person car was fun. You know, it was pretty Spartan, but I didn't mind it. I mean, it had all the basic things you need. It still drives pretty well. I mean, it definitely was showing its age because that generation's been around some years. So it's definitely, I think, due for a redesign. But, you know, if you're looking for a new car that has a decent monthly payment, it's probably, you know, who they're selling to at this point. But it was funny. So that was a 24. My All-Track is a 2017. I got it in 2016. So that's pretty old, right? And some of the controls on the steering wheel are exactly the same. Some of the buttons, some of the switches are still the same as what I had. So it was definitely they were getting their money out of the parts and whatnot. But
no, they're amortizing costs. Yes, that's how we say that.
So. Yes. Yep.
It's probably has some same parts as my 2003 Eurovan camper.
Probably. Yep. But it did have a third row in it. So fun fact about the Tiguans of this generation, they still technically you can get it with a third row. Does anyone use those third row? Probably not. I think.
Well, if you've ever had to carpool to middle school, which you have that to look forward to, Jack, right. You appreciate that third row.
Yep. But I was glad to get some time with it just because the new one's coming out, and then we'll, you know, kind of have that memory to compare when the new one, we get to drive the new one. But, you know, it seemed like kind of like a good way to see something before it becomes something else, I guess I would say.
All right. I got to drive another very practical car myself just the other day. And the story is up at autoweek.com, where you should go for all your automotive needs, except those that are met by automotivenews.com. Actually, you can go to autonews.com, right?
And
you get there's even less typing to get there. So you guys have the advantage in that regard. I just drove the Mazda CX-50 hybrid. It's half Toyota and half Mazda. I think that this is a smart thing where car companies are cooperating on some of these things. Because to come up with your own hybrid drivetrain all by yourself for a company as relatively small as Mazda. Now, Mazda, we were talking about sales. They're going to surpass 400,000 sales this year. So that's a fairly small car company. I mean, good for them that they're setting sales records, but it's not like they're General Motors or Toyota or something. So they already partnered with Toyota in Alabama at a factory. So they're making cars, they're making Toyotas and Mazdas in the same factory. And as we all know, of course, Toyota and Subaru partnered to make the 86 and BRZ. So that was a very good cooperation, and that allowed us to have a fun car. Those are both fun cars, and fun cars always sell in low volume. So whatever it takes to keep them on the market is good for us, those of us who like cars. And as real enthusiasts know, Lotus has a V6 Toyota engine in it. So that kind of cooperation is certainly not unprecedented. And as I think it's a smart thing to do and a good way to get cool cars out there. So the same factory makes Corolla Cross. So if you think about it, maybe the CX-50 hybrid is sort of like a more fun version of the Corolla Cross. I don't know. It depends how you look at it. It was for a crossover utility vehicle, given the constraints of that type of vehicle, it was actually kind of fun to drive. So I had a good time in that thing. I did not mind it at all. Let's see. I'm going to give you a couple of specs about it here. Where it sits in the lineup there, it is below. It makes 219 horsepower, which is it's not overwhelming. And in fact, if you wanted to say, if you wanted to pick a nit or make a complaint, you could say that it needs more power. But given its drivetrain right now, which is an internal combustion four-cylinder engine and three electric motors, I would have expected a little bit more get up and go. But, you know, if you really want, if you want more power, you can just go straight to the CX-50 Turbo, which makes 256 horsepower. You know, but that costs more too. So this one is still fairly affordable. It let's get into the drivetrain a little bit. The drivetrain starts with a gasoline 2.5 liter Atkinson cycle four cylinder with a remarkable 14 to 1 compression ratio. A 14 to 1 compression ratio would have been absolutely unheard of only a few years ago. So we are looking at, you know, they're taking this internal combustion process and they are maximizing it out to ridiculous levels. So the three electric motors, two of them are on the front axle. One is a starter generator that can also, that can drive the front wheels. And then there's another electric motor up front, which is much more powerful. It's a traction motor and it does most of the moving of the front. And then in the back, on the back axle, is a completely separate electric motor that can kick in when necessary. So that's the CX-50 hybrid. I believe that's in showrooms now. And I don't know. I enjoyed it. Have you driven any Mazdas up there, Jack?
I haven't. That's one I don't get too many keys to. But did it still feel like a Mazda? You know, I know the driving, Mazda driving experience is such a big thing. Obviously, it's a crossover, but did it feel more like a, just like a Toyota hybrid?
No, it felt a little bit more lively from the behind the wheel than, say, the Toyota Corolla Cross, which I have also driven. Mm-hmm. And that's our co-host there in the background, demanding lunch.
Yep.
He'll be fed. Don't worry, folks. Don't send in letters. Yep. He probably has the best life in America right now for a dog, I imagine, with Jack Walsworth taking care of him. Behind the wheel, it did feel, I don't know. I mean, you always have to temper when you say it felt fun. Like when you turn the steering wheel and the way that it responds to that turn is it's responsive enough given this a class of car and maybe one of the more responsive in the class given its price. So the problem with it is that if you get the CX-50 hybrid, you also get the CVT transmission, which just kind of eats into the turbo. Yeah. The CX-50 turbo has automatic transmission. Now, it's kind of funny that we are now recommending automatics when I don't know how many years ago we would say, oh, we demand a manual transmission. Yep. So the automatic is actually more responsive and more fun to drive than a CVT. And that's not just Mazda. That's across the board. I used to say that the Subaru CVT was the best one out there. And then I went and drove a couple more. And yes, it may be the best one out there, but it's still a CVT. There's just such a lag in there. It's like a rubber bandy kind of feel. Do you have an opinion on CVTs? Are you going to back me up, Jack?
So my wife has a Forester, which has a CVT. And, you know, it's fine. I don't know if I necessarily go out of my way to pursue a car with a CVT personally, but you know, when it's the only option, if you want a certain vehicle, it's just, you kind of have to accept it, I guess, but it's a good point. You know, if you're looking at the CX-50s, that there's some optionality there. And if you're really feeling one way, at least you've got another thing to choose from, but
yeah. So, you know, nothing's perfect in this life. The, MX, I'm thinking Miata. The CX-50 hybrid from Mazda starts at $35,390, and that includes destination. I believe it's there in your dealer showroom now, if I'm not mistaken. We have one more car to talk about in the 4.5 minutes that we have to talk. Jack got to drive a really fun Nissan.
Yeah, so I was down in Nashville end of August for a friend's wedding. He lives in the Nashville area. And I reached out to the fine folks at Nissan and they see if they had any press vehicles and they did. And I wasn't, you know, particular. I didn't request anything. And they said, would a Z Nismo work for you? I was like, I think that works. And it was super fun. It was just my wife and I, so we had just enough luggage that we could fit in the car because there's no rear seats in the Nismo. And you know, it's this job lets us get to drive pretty cool cars, things that people don't see every day. And the amount of like pointing and thumbs up and what is that while driving that around Nashville was pretty substantial. So it was super fun. I really, you know, sports cars are fun to drive, you know, anywhere, but even around the city, it was totally manageable. We did get to go up to Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky, which is like an hour and a half north of Nashville. So that was a kind of a quick jaunt up there. And even on the freeway, it was fine. Driving in a torrential downpour around Bowling Green, Kentucky, it held its own. So yeah, it was a hoot. And like,
so there were good roads?
Yeah. I mean, there was a couple bumps here and there, and I tried my best to avoid them, but sometimes you just can't, unfortunately. But no bent rims or flat tires, so happy to report that. But no, it was super cool. And, you know, it is interesting because the disease, when it was redesigned, you could still see a lot of componentry that looked like from the previous generation. So especially in the cockpit, like there's a couple, like the door latch and a couple switches that look super like, you know, 2008, 2010-ish. So it's kind of funny to see that juxtaposition with some newer bits that they put in the Z. But again, it's kind of like the Golf GTI and Golf R, you know, at least they're still an option for enthusiasts. You know, we very easily could live in a world where there are no cars like a Z Nismo at all. So, you know, can't complain too much.
We should all do our part. You know, here at KPFK, we're always getting people to donate money to us to keep the radio on the air. Maybe we should also do a pledge drive to get people to buy fun sports cars so that they remain on the market for us. Say that, and I don't actually own a fun sports car. Well, no, actually I do. I own an old Lancia and a motorcycle. So, okay, I'm doing my part.
Yep.
Can I count on you out there to do your part?
I drive a wagon, so I did my part too. So I did the journalistic duty of buying a wagon. So.
Yeah, why do we like what we're supposed to like brown diesel station wagons with manual transmissions, right?
Yep, exactly.
And in the real world, absolutely nobody would buy any of those. I'm more, I like weird minivans, so I'm not really a wagon guy. I don't know.
Well, you'd still fit in up here in Seattle. There's a ton of Volkswagen vans running around, and actually there's a shop on over by Lake Union that's all, they all specialize in VW buses and vans. And
which do they do, the air-cooled ones or the more modern ones or both?
When I drive by there, it's usually like stuff from like the 80s, 90s, but I haven't been inside the shop. But I wouldn't shock me if they do a little bit of everything. But
so is it the Eurovan with the water cooled? Yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
Probably. Wait, the Eurovan, the last year in the U.S. was 2003, which is the year that I have. And so I think it changed from the Vanagon to the Eurovan, I think, in 1991. So yeah, there you go.
Yep.
Yeah. So we have about 30 seconds left here. We want to thank Jack Walsworth. Remember, folks, for all your automotive information needs, go to autonews.com and go to Jack's articles and click on every single one of them several times. And do the same at autoweek.com. Go to my articles, click on them over and over again until your finger starts to hurt. That's all we ask. And please remember to donate to KPFK. You can go to kpfk.org and make a donation to keep this station on the air and keep the show going. And check out our Facebook page. And we will see you here next week on The Car Show.
This Sunday, November 17th from 2 until 6 p.m. is the KPFK Local Station Board Town Hall Meeting at the Center for Black Power, 3349 West 43rd Street, Los Angeles, 90008 at Crenshaw Boulevard. Dr. Melina Abdullah will speak briefly about the recent elections And then the board members want to hear from you about how KPFK can better serve the communities of Southern California. This is a great chance to meet your delegates on the LSB, KPFK programmers and management, and to speak with and to other listeners like yourself about what we can do to defend and enhance freedom of speech, cultural expression, and the press in the coming period. More information is on the station website at kpfk.org.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.